Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 project here on the Nerd Party, the only podcast that takes you through the films and now TV series of A24, along with interviews with the people involved in America's hottest distributor. On today's show, we take a look at A24's first foray into the world of television with 2017's Comrade Detective. I'm Dallas King, and with me as ever is Lee Hutchison, ready to shake things up a bit.
It's the moment it just catches me that this is like an audio format. Like I was thinking like I could do a funny thing where I dub myself, but that immediately gets lost in audio format. So I will just simply say, hello, Dallas.
Hello. So, you know, before we dive into the world of television, long-form storytelling, as it will be, of course, you know, it's been a couple of weeks since we last spoke to you with the only new A24 film for the foreseeable future, On the Rocks, which is now available on Apple TV, and you can check out our review of that on the last episode. But we do have some news. News broke in the last week that there will be a new collaboration between Apple TV and A24 on a film called Bride, starring Scarlett Johansson, making her return to A24 following Under the Skin, and she'll be teaming up with director Sebastian Lillo, who's done such films as A Fantastic Woman and also Gloria Bell, which was on the A24 project earlier as well. And this film, not much is known yet, as with all sort of films, just a brief sort of description about a bride. The perfect bride is constructed by an ambitious entrepreneur, but when she rebels against her programming, she escapes her idyllic mansion and then goes out into the world where she's treated as a freak and a monster, and she must learn to forge her own identity. So essentially, from that brief description, what I'm getting is potentially the Stepford Wives meets Frankenstein. So what do you make of this latest team up for A24?
Yeah, it was an interesting one when it caught me, because it seemed like a kind of, I would read that sort of straight Bride of Frankenstein kind of style plot. It's interesting, obviously we've got the return of Scarlett Johansson. I loved Fantastic Woman, so I'm interested to see sort of Sebastian Lillo kind of follow that up. I liked Disobedience. I thought it was a little bit too kind of, after you come off something so kind of bright and colourful as Fantastic Woman, and to come up with it was something a bit kind of as grey as sort of Disobedience was a bit of a shock. And then Gloria Bell, I enjoyed as sort of a Sunday afternoon kind of watch. But I'm excited to see sort of where they go with this one. And it's going to be interesting to see sort of more of this kind of quality coming of sort of A24, Apple TV kind of movies. It's definitely going to be interesting. And Scarlett Johansson is an interesting choice for a freak, I guess. You know, there she goes, taking away the jobs from, you know, normal looking freaks like myself.
Well, you know, she can play any role, can't she? You know, she can play Asian, she can play a tree, she can play anything. So look forward to seeing that one. And yeah, it looks like A24 are covering their bases and certainly doubling down on the Apple TV partnership. So they will always have at least one way to distribute their films and make sure they are seen by audiences. But one film which is on their back, on their slate, that is due to come up, which we may see in the potential near future, is going to be Minari, which is a Korean film by Lee Isaac-chung, and this made waves at the Sundance Film Festival all the way back in January of this year. Still doesn't have a confirmed release date, but they have sort of essentially confirmed that apparently this is going to be the film, well, it's practically the only film they will have to push for the Oscars, but they are going to be giving an Oscar push. And Steven Yeun, who was in sort of The Walking Dead, Okja, and excellent in the film Burning as well, he's going to be pushed for Best Actor. I think there'll be a couple of supporting roles there, and probably sort of Best Director, Best Film and stuff like this. So I haven't read too much about it. I want to go into this one blind, but what do you make of the fact that A24 are going to have another crack at the Oscars issue round? Is it going to be advisable for them to just stick to one film rather than, you know, the disappointment of last year spreading themselves maybe a bit too thin across Uncut Gems, Lighthouse, Waves, etc., etc.?
It stands a really good chance, I would think, based on sort of the reviews kind of coming out of places like Sundance. I think the trailer is very Oscar friendly. I think it would be a good way to kind of put it. You watch something like that and you think it probably stands a better chance than Uncut Gems. You think of sort of, you know, obviously they're trying to continue to make the demographic of Oscar voters more kind of diverse. But you look at something like Uncut Gems, it splits opinions, even for people that are paying to go see it in the cinema, for example. Eighth Grade, you know, you think of films like that, you think, oh, they'll appeal to the younger, hipper audiences. You know, a lot of these sort of Oscar demographics kind of tend to skew a bit older. So I think sort of the success of Parasite has opened, you know, people's eyes potentially to sort of Asian talent and actors being kind of rewarded, which I hope will follow through into this film. I think it stands a really good chance, but my main surprise and shock is that we have a date that this will be sort of get an Oscar push, whereas sort of things like, say, Modern America anyway, The Green Knight and Zola all sort of remain sort of on the back burners, and those are the films more sort of in the respect of sort of The Green Knight and Zola that I'm desperate to see. So yeah, they must have some sort of potential hope that things are about to maybe take a turn, you know, that they can maybe open in LA or New York, but at the moment it still seems pretty bleak, even though there's talk of New York cinemas opening, I think, this week potentially.
Yeah, no, I guess A24, given the fact that they are based in New York, will obviously want to give New York, I guess, sort of first crack at these films. So I guess, but I think they're, given how everything's gone with people announcing and then pushing back and then pushing back further and then pushing back to 2021, they're probably going to want to test, at least see, you know, that if the cinemas do reopen in New York, they're going to stay reopened. They're not going to suddenly have to close down again after a couple of weeks and something like that. So I think they're going to bide their time. And then I guess we're going to have to wait until a blended festival or a virtual film festival in early 2021 before we see the likes of Green Knight. It was meant to be South by Southwest back in sort of February or March, and then it got cancelled with that festival. So, I mean, I think when you had your interview with David Lowry, he said it was a rough cut. They hadn't maybe finished it yet. So, I mean, it should all be locked down now, and it's just waiting down for a chance to see it. Could be Berlin, perhaps. Would we be lucky enough to see it at Glasgow? You know, Glasgow Film Festival. They've done pretty well with getting A24 films in the past, so just putting it out there. We'd love to have you in Glasgow. So I guess we'll just have to see. But as always, you know, everything is fluid at the moment, and we just, who knows what's going to happen. And we'll just have to patiently wait and hope that Minari at least gets a limited theatrical release around sort of December, January, February, sometime like that. We'll have to see. But on to the main event of this episode, and it is 2017's Comrade Detective, which was the first foray into television by A24. And this is quite an interesting show, I think it's fair to say. It is the brainchild of several people, including Channing Tatum. Essentially described as a parody comedy designed to resemble non-existent gritty 1980s Cold War Romanian police show that promoted communist ideals. The action-packed and blood-soaked first season finds detectives Gregor Angel and Joseph Bacchio investigating the murder of fellow officer Nikita Ionescu, and in the process unravelling a subversive plot to destroy their country that is fueled by what else but the greatest enemy in the world, capitalism. So, Lee, did you know much about this show before pressing play earlier this week?
I kind of had a little bit of an inkling. I think maybe some point last year, I decided to check out some of the A24 TV shows. I haven't really got very far, to be honest. I've watched Euphoria Season 1. I have a bunch of things on my watch list to get going with. But with Comrade Detective, I had watched about 3/4 of the first episode. I knew sort of about kind of the concept of it being this sort of Romanian show that was dubbed, and I found that really quite interesting. One of my favourite shows, and I can imagine if you're kind of a listener to a podcast like this, is that you're familiar with something like Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, you know, something that takes the concept of this really lost footage from a different era that has slightly kind of bad dubbing, you know, ropey special effects, etc. And you think, that could be quite interesting, as sort of a buddy cop concept. But I think my big issue with sort of Comrade Detective, and why I could only say I have had an inkling, was because I just couldn't finish that first episode. It's one of those ones, like something like Garth Marenghi's Dark Place is 22 minutes. It nails sort of the time and patience that you'll have to go along with something that's a bit of a parody and a gimmick. Whereas Comrade Detective, at 45 minute long episodes, you know, over sort of six, it's really found it, I found it hard to keep myself interested in the show. I just wasn't that much interested in the plot, and I just found it wore thin for me very, very quickly.
I'm so glad you mentioned that particular reference because I have it written down at the top of my piece of paper here, and that is, of course, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, which is, I think, the closest I could come to a comparison for this, in that it is a spoof show, but presented as a real show, and people have found the footage and restored it to its original format, and complete with sort of going back occasionally to the creators of the show and talking to them about it, because not every episode, but I think at least three or four of these Conrad Detective episodes are certainly the first one. It's introduced by Channing Tatum and writer and screenwriter John Ronson talking about how they came across this. They'd heard about the show, Stanley Kubrick had been a fan, they'd found the original footage and had gone back and sort of dubbed it over for American audiences so they could enjoy the show. And if it hadn't said on IMDb and stuff like that that it was a spoof sort of parody, I mean, I certainly would have been taken in by the look. I mean, it certainly says the look and the feel of the show seems very authentic, and for certainly for like the first episode, you could buy it being okay. Maybe they've just sort of taken a show that they found and have just created a brand new storyline by basically dubbing it in English and creating their own sort of thing. But yeah, I did have to say I did struggle with the pacing. I think 35-40 minutes per episode was too long. I think, yeah, if it had been in that sort of sweet spot of sort of 20 to 25 minutes, like your standard sort of half hour American TV episode, something like that, I think it would have flowed a lot better. It's sometimes there's a lot of plot going on, but when it all sort of wraps up, maybe there's not really much to it. It sort of reminded me of a blend of sort of Garth Marenghi's Dark Place meets The Nice Guys, and sort of this certainly due to certain certainly one specific voice casting choice. It made me sort of think of The Nice Guys with the sort of as Shane Black sort of does with this plot on plot on plot, where there's one big case, but then there's little cases that sort of feed into that and all sort of get tied together in the end. So, I mean, given now that you've given it a go and you sort of watched all six episodes, were you able to sort of get a little bit more drawn in to it?
Not ultimately. It became one of those ones, like it became like a chore to kind of watch. That it was just one of those ones. It just wore out its welcome really, really quickly. You could imagine like a shorter running time, and the gags being kind of much more frequent. That it would just land much quicker. Like I think it has a great payoff at the end in terms of how they sort of wrap it. The how the villain gets his comeuppance. But you're like, I've spent what about 5 hours, give or take, to get to this point. You think of some. I always think of A24 perhaps as like relatively short run times, well paced. Whatever, if it's going for comedy or drama, the hits keep coming. It's got a really good ratio. It always keeps you engaged. With this, it was just like it became sort of, I almost treat it like an audio play. Like I would find myself maybe doing some work for the website or something like that where it was kind of on. It just didn't kind of grip me, and that was what kind of stopped me episode one, and it continued on through sort of the remaining episodes, which was really frustrating because you look at the voice talent, and I mean it was absolutely fantastic. I mean, you think of people that are quite familiar to us on A24. We've got like former guests on the show, Bo Burnham, Daniel Craig, like some of these ones that really stick out. You've like Kim Basinger, Richard Jenkins. So many names kind of stick out, and then you've got your two leads in sort of Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Channing Tatum, all really, really exciting names. But it's just Jenny Slate, she's been on a couple of A24 things as well, and I really like John Ronson. He's someone I'm very interested in. It had great talent, but just it was too long. The pacing was completely wrong, and it became what a really bad joke can be, is overindulgent, and it just Yeah, the communist jokes were funny, but it didn't need 45 minutes to have that as the punchline.
Yeah, no, I think that's the problem was it's yeah, it's as a concept, I thought it was really interesting to sort of have especially have Americans dubbing essentially anti-American cop show. I thought that was funny, but I think it just stretched itself too thin over that running time, because I think by the time all in, you were looking at sort of 4 hours of this show, and I mean, you would struggle to sort of maintain that momentum on like a two hour sort of 15 sort of movie like LA Confidential or The Nice Guys or something like that. So the plot really was sort of stretched to as thin as you could possibly get whilst trying to sort of keep you entertained with sort of like characters being double crossed and stuff like that. But like you say, and sort of the central mystery was, it's like, if you've got a masked character, now this is not just a criticism of the show, this is a criticism of any film or any TV show. If you have a masked character or a villain who you never see the face of, and you get to about at least the halfway point and you don't know the identity of that person, it's pretty much guaranteed that it's going to be someone that you've already met at some point. So you know that they are going to be double crossed, whether it is the angry police chief, which is brilliantly played by Nick Offerman. I mean, he needs, he sort of did that in 21 Jump Street. And you can see, I think, with the voice talent involved, this is sort of Channing Tatum's little brainchild, and maybe he wanted to do this. And he worked with Joseph Gordon-Levitt on sort of G.I. Joe and a couple of other films, worked with Daniel Craig on Logan Lucky, worked with Nick Offerman on 21 Jump Street and stuff like that. And then you've got like Oscar winner Mahershala Ali in for like one episode, Bo Burnham one episode, Chloe Sevigny playing JJ's wife and stuff like that, Kim Basinger in for like one episode. It's just crazy the level of voice that, if you put that, I mean, that is an insane level of talent to have on essentially a joke that doesn't really work. But all credit to them for giving it a go. But it just couldn't maintain that momentum, which is a shame, because there were parts where it was funny. I did like some of the stuff where it clearly, they'd kept the writing for as it would have been essentially effectively translated from a Romanian sort of thing. So there was like a line like, you won't know until you walk a kilometer in his shoes, because that was because of obviously the difference between the Americans and not having the metric system. They would say a mile, but they've got this in they're using the metric system, so they're saying a kilometer. So there you go. And I did like I think it was the second episode with this all running long gag about how the guy didn't know what Monopoly was, and he had to go to his parents were in jail for becoming materialists, and basically Richard Jenkins trying to explain the concept of Monopoly to him, I thought was very funny. But were there any particular sort of voice castings that stood out for you? Because Daniel Craig, I have to say, was quite a surprise when he turned up. It was like, is that him? And then sort of going on, I think while watching it on Prime, it comes up with a little IMDb sort of fact, trivia thing on the side, and sort of tell you who's in it, and it's like, I couldn't believe it was Daniel Craig that turned up.
Yeah, I'm glad I wasn't the only one doing that. I think the show like this lends itself to, what is it they call it, Amazon X-ray or something like that. Like, I tend to find it quite annoying, but with this it was like, was that who I thought it was? And I would kind of go back and forth every so often to check that voice. I mean, Daniel Craig really stood out for me. John DiMaggio is a voice I loved as a kid, sort of for Bender and Futurama. It was nice to hear him as, I think it was Tipsy. And there was just a lot of really good kind of voice work. Jenny Slate, I thought, was excellent as Jane. And as you say, sort of Nick Offerman really stood out. But I think the thing I liked the most about it was, while I may not have been a fan of sort of the execution, as it were, of it, I liked the ambition. I'd read a really interesting article, it was on Vanity Fair, which was amusingly titled, "What the Hell is Comrade Detective?" And there was a great line where sort of Channing Tatum, as you touched on, is not just a voice talent, he's a producer on it. And he asked the creators to bring him the worst ideas that they could think of, with the reasoning that, quote, "When you try to find something that is not working, you figure out what's cool about it and you can find some really hidden gems." And I think their original plan was, and potentially I think this could have maybe been a bit more interesting, was to sort of take communist propaganda from the 80s and dub them over. But there was so much issues with rights and so on that they just decided to make their own thing. But what I really, really like and respect is that they decided to shoot this in Romania with an all sort of Romanian cast by and large. I thought that was really impressive and a great commitment to go into a place where it doesn't seem to get much attention from Hollywood or TV industries and really like pick great local talent. I thought the physical kind of bodies and so on in this thing were really interesting to look at, kind of great faces. I thought the casting was excellent. I would definitely be interested in watching a subtitle version, perhaps of Comrade Detective. Maybe just like one episode, you know, I struggled enough through the first six, but I think that's what I really liked most of all and respect about it, is like they committed to the idea and saw it all through in a way when it would have been so much easier to have done something kind of in some sort of American backwater town, for example.
Yeah, I mean, because like the look of it is spot on, you know, they've managed to get the 80s sort of style, the sort of costumes, the hair, mustaches, everything sort of did a great job on the production design. I mean, I wonder how they pitched it to the actors in the show, saying essentially, we're making a Romanian cop show about communism. You're going to be the stars. However, when you see the final show, we're not going to hear your voice. It's going to be the voice of American actors dubbing it in. I mean, how would you sort of, I mean, fair play, they clearly committed to it because, you know, they've turned up and delivered the performances. But I mean, how would you feel sort of knowing, being able to act that, knowing that your voice is not going to be heard in the final sort of production?
Hollywood money, baby. Yeah, I still think it's a fantastic kind of opportunity. I do, it is one of those ones frustrating because I suppose the whole joke is the kind of the dubbing element. So I can't imagine in Romania or on Romanian Amazon Prime that you can watch it without sort of the dubbing. I mean, there definitely feels like there's something lost out there. And I do feel that there should be a choice, especially when you have things like Amazon Prime, for example. I mean, you can have every language in the world dubbed over these things so that people from Azerbaijan to Russia to everywhere in between can tune in and enjoy the content. It would be interesting because it wouldn't be difficult for them to perhaps put up the original dub with English kind of English subtitles or something on it. I mean, Amazon is well positioned to do that, or, you know, if this was the day of sort of, you know, big DVD sales, etc., you can imagine perhaps a Comrade Detective, you know, where there would maybe be a couple of episodes on sort of the original dub. You know, I always think of those great DVDs that were packed with bonus special features, and I could picture a Comrade Detective being one of those kind of three disc sets, for example, that would end up maybe getting handed around, you know, amongst students or friends and so on, of like, oh, you've got to check out this show.
Yeah, because it's a weird one because, yeah, it's a show that can only work, like you say, it could only work by listening to the American dub because that's the joke. And, you know, I did watch it with subtitles on just because I kind of I've fallen into that just because, I don't know, it helps me sort of concentrate more on the TV show when I'm watching it at home when there's other distractions and whatever, so it also forces me to do that. And the subtitles were subtitled for the American dub, whereas I've seen foreign language films on Netflix where you put on the closed captions or the subtitles, and if you put the dubbed version on, the subtitles do not match the dub. So they've taken the subtitles from the Japanese translation subtitles, but then they don't match the English dub version. So you've got two people essentially working on different things, and it's just very confusing. So sometimes it's best just to watch it in the original language with the subtitles. But yeah, like you say, it would only work in American. And yeah, it's the thing of how would you successfully land the joke? Because it sort of also reminds me of Airplane, where essentially they took much of the basis. They basically bought a script, I think it's of something like I think it was Airport 75, which was basically about a plane, this plane that was in trouble and needing to land, and they need to find someone to land it who's on the plane and stuff. And like about 70% of the dialogue from that script is the script for Airplane, but the way that it's delivered turns it into a sort of deadpan comedy and one of the funniest films of all time. So it's, I guess it's all about how you approach it. You know, very serious things can become funny if done in the right way. And I mean, I'm not sure how boned up you are on your sort of capitalist versus communist sort of politics and ethos of the free market and stuff like that. But I mean, did all the sort of jokes land for you, or was it did a lot of it go over your head?
As someone that is addicted to Twitter.com, many a communist joke or a line seemed very, very familiar and kind of made me laugh. I think it's become one of those ones. I mean, it's also become kind of a slur, hasn't it, really, sort of to describe people as communists and socialists and so on. But yeah, I thought there was lots of good jokes in amongst all kind of these six episodes, but as I say, there's just a lot of just kind of plotting and kind of meandering going around that I thought those were the funniest parts, were like the good jokes about communism. And as you say, the Monopoly bit had me in stitches, but the dubbing itself never made me laugh as such. Like, it'd be more like, oh, that's that voice, that's that person. I never was laughing along sort of at the dubbing element, and it didn't seem to have perhaps the issue that you saw where, say, Garth Marenghi's place, for example, did really well, where it was sometimes the dubbing would just be ever so slightly out of sync, or it was too well polished. I felt that they should have gone with the Garth Marenghi approach of have it not just like we're movie fans that we love this show and we want to pay tribute to it and dub it. It should have been, here was the dubbed version from years ago, and it's not just that they've got all these famous faces in where you kind of have to recognize them if you're at home. Like, it ultimately feels like there's a huge flaw at the heart of the dubbing, is that the dubbing itself isn't funny. Yeah, the idea of a dubbed one, it maybe give you a chuckle for a few seconds, but that's not enough to sustain it for 6 hours.
Yeah, I think it's because the majority of the voice acting is played straight and with the original American accents. I think Daniel Craig certainly sort of puts on a Eastern European accent for a few scenes and stuff, but I think maybe if they'd attempted to put on sort of Hungarian, Romanian accents and stuff like that, maybe it might have added to the joke slightly. But I think perhaps the problem is that a lot of it is played too straight, and therefore maybe some of the jokes don't land as much as they should. So ultimately, I think we're sort of saying that it's a interesting concept which really could have been something special, but unfortunately episodes were too long. Unfortunately, didn't have the gag ratio to fully justify its existence. I know on Amazon it was said sort of Comrade Detective season one, but and certainly sort of ends with a to be continued, but I don't think we're going to be seeing a Comrade Detective season two anytime soon, are we?
No, I wouldn't suspect so. Don't tune into that episode in 2022.
Yeah, so I mean, it's certainly worth a watch. Some people may be able to stick with it. Some people may watch a couple of episodes, decide it's not for them. But, you know, it's certainly worth, it's a interesting failure, I think, on the part. But, I mean, it's certainly clear that what we can do is easily recommend Garth Marenghi's Dark Place to anyone, which is available on all four in the UK. I'm not sure how you'd be able to view it in America, perhaps with a VPN. Although, of course, I'm not going to say that you should or shouldn't do anything like that. But perhaps I'm sure there's probably a way to watch it in the US as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I suppose we've had to be inventive with how we've accessed some of these Netflix movies. So I'm sure our listeners will do the same.
Yes, and because we have a lack of films to review in the near future, we're going to stick with TV shows for the next wee while. So do you want to give a tease as to what people might be able to expect to hear us review in the next couple of months?
Yeah, so kind of how things are going to go. So for the next 2 weeks, you're going to get two interviews sort of before our next episode comes back. So next week, we're going to have an interview with Gergay Orban. So he worked on Midsommar as a set PA, and he tells some really exciting stories about his experiences with Ari Aster and what an inspirational director he was to work with. So look out for that one. He's also worked on things like Blade Runner 2049. I know you and other listeners are huge fans of that, so that's something to look forward to as well. And then before we sort of dive into Remy season one on November 23rd, we're going to have another interview, and this is one I really enjoyed kind of doing, and that's with Teddy Blanks. So he has worked on Lady Bird, The Lighthouse, Midsommar, Hereditary, upcoming Green Knight, Zola. And yeah, he's worked on things like Little Women and Her Smile as well outside of A24. And he works on title and font design. And I suspect if you're listening to podcasts on the Nerd Party, that something like that will really appeal to you. What I love about the interview is that it's really interesting to hear how he collaborates with people like Greta Gerwig, Ari Aster, Robert Eggers, you know, all very different directors. So it's really interesting to see how that partnership all works up. And we recorded about a month ago and he was actually still working on The Green Knight. That was still being refined with font design, etc. So I would highly recommend tuning into that one as well. And then we'll be back to talk about Remy season one, November 23rd. We'll then have a little break and then we'll be back to discuss Euphoria season one in early December. So we're going to try and drop that one on the day that these two new Euphoria specials drop. And then sort of late December, we'll have Remy season two. And then into January, we'll hopefully touch on these two Euphoria specials that are dropping then. And then we'll maybe see what other sort of A24 shows we can access and dive into. So hopefully enough to keep you going for the next few months as we wait for the next wave of films. And hopefully we can bring you a few more interviews too.
Absolutely. And if there's any sort of A24 shows in particular that you might like to hear us discuss easily, just give us a shout on Twitter or Instagram, whatever, and let us know what you might. And then we'll try and figure out a way to see if we can watch them and give you our thoughts. But it's always nice to hear from you one way or the other what you think of the show. And recently we've been running a competition to win some St. Maud tote bags. So basically, on the day that this podcast drops, we're probably going to be announcing the winners, but we've had some lovely feedback recently from people, including someone who said that we are a ridiculously beautifully shot and acted psychological horror film with shades of repulsion that belie its low budget with its script and visual artistry. They seem to think that they were actually reviewing St. Maud, but we'll take it anyway. There was another one which said, when the podcast matches the brand which matches the product, a true deep dive into one of the most exciting and inventive film distributors of our time. This podcast captures the essence of all this and more. Keep up the good work. We certainly will. Someone said that we were definitely a lucky find, a wonderful piece of fan media covering the A24 filmography. Such an informative, moody podcast. My best decision ever. This podcast is perfect for any movie lover. Must listen for A24 fans. Someone said the A24 project changed his life. So that's always nice to hear. So even though the competition may be coming to an end, we're certainly not going to say no if you want to head over to iTunes and leave us a review and let us know what you think. But in the meantime, we're off to binge watch Remy season one and we'll be back in a couple of weeks. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.